Hey, my guest on podcasting them softly this morning is none other than Daniel Roebuck. He's the star of such films as The Fugitive, Money Talks, U.S. Marshals, Final Destination, We Were Soldiers, Baba Hotep, The Devil's Reject. He's been on TV shows like Lois and Clark, The Drew Carey Show, The West Wing, ER, Monk, you name it, he's done it. Daniel Roebuck, thank you for being on podcasting them soft.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Ken.
That's fantastic. Well, first, right off the bat, what we have to talk about is your new film, Getting Grace. It was absolutely beautiful, moving, poignant. It made me cry, man.
Oh, Ken, how old are you?
Hey, I'm 38.
38 and I made you cry. That's good. That's the non-crying. So,
right.
38 and like 17.
Yeah.
Two years. So, well, you know, it's so interesting. Getting Grace has been such a journey for me. And I'm really learning to take these compliments. Because, you know, as actors go, I try not to be too narcissistic, excuse me.
You're right.
And, you know, like, so, you know, people, when they credit you in a movie, you're like, oh, well, that's a lot of people who helped make that good. In this particular case, I think I finally am allowed to take all the credit. So I am glad that the movie touched you and moved you. And it has touched and moved many people, I'm pleased to say.
Yeah. It just got me, I kind of knew what was coming. Like, it's building up to it. And I won't spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but you know, the ending gets you. I was reminded of another movie that always gets me in the end is Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
And, man, I was talking with a friend of mine, a screenwriter, and he was talking about Field of Dreams, and I said, man, the end of that movie always just kills me. And and he said, what part? And I said, really, not right up until Costner just recognizes it. He goes, oh, my God, it's my father. Right, and that just slays me every time. And with your beautiful movie, it just you kind of know what's coming because it is the inevitable. It still doesn't prepare you for when the moment actually arrives, and then you just, geez, yeah. It even gets.
Ken, it's interesting that both movies thematically are about. I mean, mine's more allegorical. For God's grace, but both those films deal with an issue, which is the loss of fatherhood.
Yes,
not loss of absence,
connection. Yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, it's interesting. Field of Dreams for me, I just really think it's such a beautiful, well-made movie. But I've always had such a unique and entertaining relationship with my own father.
Yeah,
and. Hopefully, I've given that same kind of possibility to my own children. Hopefully, they're always, you know, they always think of me fondly.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a father is hard in this day and age. And by the way, everything that we're shown on television is that, you know, the dad's the stupidest guy in the family.
Right, right.
But in real life, do you have kids now?
I do, yep.
Yeah, you're not the stupidest. In your family.
No.
I'm not the stupidest guy in my family. But that, you know, our modern culture is representing, they're trying to diminish the need and the role of fathers. In the movie, I actually quote Pope Francis, and I have a non-Catholic quote to another non-Catholic, and the second guy says to the first guy, wait, isn't the Pope the other guy's boss? Meaning, you know, he's not an Episcopalian leader.
Right.
But, you know, character says wisdom is wisdom, and he talks about, you know, how fathers are so necessary in raising children in wisdom and virtue.
Yeah.
That's what we need our dads for.
Yeah.
To frankly tell us when we're acting stupid.
Yeah. I also thought it was a beautiful kind of, how should we say, I thought it had a beautiful link to an old Disney movie, Hayley Mills, called Pollyanna, where she comes. She's like this little ray of sunshine that comes to the town, and they're all kind of, you know, snobby and snotty and snooty and whatever else. And she brings joy, hope, all that sort of thing to their kind of miserable existence. You know, and, you know, it has Carl Malden as the preacher, and he's very angry, and he gets up and preaches the hellfire every Sunday. And in the end, she turns him around, you know, and he starts to preach joy and hope and all this sort of stuff. So when I was watching it, that was sort of lingering in the back of my head.
And so, you know, I haven't seen that movie for years, and honestly, I didn't make the connection. But as you're saying, Ken, I'm telling you, I will go back. Look, in the first place, Haley Mills is literally right up there with Ron Howard.
Yeah.
As perhaps the greatest kid actor to ever exist.
Mm.
And because she was, as a child, she was, remember Parent Trap, how great she was?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And then Lindsay Lohan did actually an honestly astounding job herself. But there, now we're getting back to what we were discussing before we started rolling. What is that thing that people get everything that they ever dream of, and then you know, they go down a path of self-destruction?
That's true, yeah.
I don't know where Lindsay Lohan is now, but as a kid, you know, nobody could match her talent.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm gonna rewatch that movie. Well, yeah, Grace is, so, I mean, I don't want to get in people thinking I'm an overly religious filmmaker.
Right.
I'm just a guy making a movie. I mean, I am a guy who has personal faith, but I'm certainly not, getting Grace doesn't dictate anything.
No, no.
It suggests that we should have some.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you'll find when you watch it again, I know that I did after watching your film, it just, there are so many, as far as having someone, I mean, in your film, the character has a very dire situation, and there's not that much at stake in the likes of Pollyanna, right? But she still has the weight or the cloud of this place, and I mean, there is the character in Pollyanna who's, I forget the actress, but she's obsessed about dying, and she has the funeral director around every other day, and, you know, and he's picking out the coffin accoutrements for her and all that sort of stuff. And those early scenes in the film where you are in the funeral parlor and the kids are, like, playing around, which I've got to say, the funniest line I absolutely loved is when the kid accidentally locks herself in the coffin. And you say, I've got to look for the keys. And she goes, look for the keys? He goes, well, most people don't want to get out.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Mm.
Yeah, that's... And you know, trying to be, honestly, to put those kind of sequences in a movie and kind of demystifying that whole funereal, like that world that people are... Like, that's behind the cloud of confusion. Nobody knows what goes on over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they fear funeral directors, and they're always, you know, in movies, I mean, if they're being played by anyone, it's usually Angus Scrimm, you know?
Right, yeah.
If Angus Scrimm is playing you, it's not going to end up good. You know, he's the tall man in Phantom. But, yeah, I mean, I thought that was a lot of fun to try to build comedy in a place where, you know, people are usually so, like, they're not even breathing, they're so nervous about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that means a lot to me that you saw the humor in those sequences.
Mm.
What I think is interesting is the kids, you know, all these kids have this shadow kind of creeping up on them.
Yeah.
And none of them is really afraid of it.
Yeah.
And even, I like the kids are in there, they're like, wow. You know, they've never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful irreverence to their thinking, you know, because they don't know, like, most, like the funeral, the whole funeral scene that's going on in and around that sequence, and everyone is very appropriately mournful, and ultimately that funeral degenerates in such a beautiful way. And your character is horrified because you're so used to the tradition of the whole thing. But when the lady tells you, no, he would love this. He loved children. He wouldn't want this to be a sad, mournful occasion. You know, it's like an Irish funeral. An Irish funeral is more like a party, right? So it's a celebration of life, not the lamenting of death, as it were.
Well, I mean, hopefully that's what people take away from Grace is, it's not a movie about a kid dying with cancer. It's a movie about a kid living through cancer. That's what it's about. It's about celebrating life. I think that's why people are being drawn to it, because, you know, we're all these movies, all these movies portraying this kind of event, you know, are by nature, you know, they're love stories and they're hard to watch, whatever. They're just, this really is a celebration. And I, you know, cancer, everybody deals with it. You can't, that's the purpose of the other mother in the story. We're seeing two mothers totally incapable of dealing with the situation. And you know, one mother is there, you know, particularly to entice the audience into have a negative reaction to her until the point when, in that first funeral sequence where you realize, wait a minute, what she's dealing with is impossible for a parent. How do you get through it? So every parent's going to deal with it differently.
Sure.
And that was kind of I don't want to say playing with the audience, but kind of enticing the audience to see that having a knee-jerk reaction might not be the correct reaction.
Right. Yeah.
To see what I'm saying, like, and that's kind of the fun of making a movie is you know, everything shouldn't be obvious. You know what's probably going to happen.
You're right.
But we tried to put a lot of surprises in there so that you as the audience never knew what was going to be the next thing out of someone's mouth.
Right.
Much of a place, you just know it would be inappropriate.
Mm. We have to spend a minute definitely talking about Madeline and her absolutely phenomenal performance. She's got a big future, this girl.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Kent, I literally, you know, I've been looking for that character. I went to my hometown, a small town, 80,000 people, and I said, you know, we're going to make the movie. I said at a press conference, I'm going to try to find the lead actress in the Lehigh Valley, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, my buddies here in Hollywood said, you're a moron. It's impossible. And then, you know, I've read a lot of girls, but in walks Madeline Dundon, and, you know, she takes your breath away.
Yeah.
And I think there's something else going on as a, you know, the guy who's been involved in creative processes for nearly 45 years of my life, maybe closer to 50, really.
Yeah.
Sometimes things are just meant to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I got that script in 2018. So in about 2009, 2010,
right.
I got the script in Grace. And I couldn't make it until 2016 because I had to wait for Madeline Dundon to be fully cooked.
Right.
And ready to go. That's how strongly I feel that she was the one and only Grace that there ever would have been.
Yeah. And just like I said, phenomenal performance she has. She can do comedy, she can do serious, she has this delightful, as they say, she's got it, I think. She has it. They talk about the it factor. So, yeah, I can...
I am grateful. I'm so proud about you. You know, here's a strange thing, too. So, you know, I don't know how it is there where you guys are, but, you know, maybe people think, well, unless they're from Sydney, they're just not, you know, the greatest actors are in the capital. I don't know.
Right.
But here we always think New York is the center of the acting world, or Los Angeles. But I came from I came from the same high school.
Right, right.
If I could come out of the town and do what I've done, and I mean, I did River's Edge 2 years after I moved from from Pennsylvania to Hollywood.
Right, right.
And, you know, River's Edge, that wasn't terrible. Seems people are still talking about that in a positive way.
Right, right.
You know, like, why can't you find someone in the hinterlands? You know, they're here, they're called the flyover states.
Right.
People think that, you know, nothing intelligent or good could possibly come from the state of Pennsylvania.
Right.
And here was this magical girl just waiting a movie star waiting to be discovered.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, she has that quality like a few other actresses have in the past, you know, the likes of, I think she's got a Meg Ryan thing going. She's got, you know, some different qualities, which is going to really be an asset for her going forward.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And she, you know what's interesting about her, Ken? She loves old movies.
Okay.
That was kind of my joke. She was so confused that Getting Grace was in color.
Right,
she didn't know that they make color movies.
Right.
She thought The Wizard of Oz was, they just did that once in 1939 and never did it again. Because she watches Audrey Hepburn and Joan Crawford and Betty Davis. And you know, honestly, as did I watch the male equivalents of those actors.
Yeah.
Child, Jimmy Kennedy, Humphrey Bogart, Boris Karloff. I watched, that's how I learned how to be an actor.
Right, right.
And, you know, the leap, you could see, like, the extraordinary leap of, like, the, you know, the histrionics of 1931 to, you know, you're watching, think of any great movie from 1952, heck, White Christmas, I don't know, you know, like there's just so many great Sunset Boulevard, those performances are so amazing.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, my first encountering of you is in a film that I still love to this day was in Dudes.
Dudes, oh really?
Yeah.
But that movie's having a real resurgence lately.
Yeah.
Who would have known? Yeah, that was, I'll tell you, that was a good time. That was John Cryer and me and Penelope Spheres of the Decline of Western Civilization. And a few, she just only did a few narrative movies. We were, I think, her third.
Right.
That was a good time, boy. That was Johnny and I, once we met each other, we were inseparable.
Right, right. Yeah.
He's an actor I'm sorry I don't see enough of, but such a good actor, and how great that he's gone on to such wonderful success
life. When I saw you in the funeral parlor, though, the first thing that popped into my head was a very similar type of role in a sense that you played in Bubba Hotep.
Oh yeah, right. That's right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Me and Dan Schweiger. Oh, I just talked to Danny today. Don Coscarelli uses Dan in a lot of his things, and he uses me too. Hopefully, I'm a good luck charm for him. That's where you want to be. You want to be the director's good luck charm.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that was another great. that's a great movie, that Bubba Hotep.
You know what was great about it? It was like Lansdale's book was amazing. It was just a great original story.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was so far out there. And Don Coscarelli, aside from being really one of the nicest people that I've ever met in Hollywood, is just such a good storyteller.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's just such a, he's got such a pulse of that stuff. And it's funny that he keeps, you know, one great kind of genre movie after another. I like John Dies as well.
Yes, John Dies was great.
Very
impressive. I love, he has a little interview on the extras of the DVD, and I love how it begins. He says, "This is the first movie that was made that was selected by a machine," because he was on the internet and he was on Amazon and looking for a book to buy. And of course, Amazon, with their algorithms, if you select a certain titles, you know, then certain similar titles pop up. Oh, if you read this, you might like XYZ.
Oh, right, exactly.
Right. And
well, yeah,
so,
it's like a robot.
Yeah, and so one of the selections was John Dies at the end. And of course, he read it and loved it. I mean, it is just so, such a... an out there fresh story I just thought, and pairing it with Don, who's a great, you know, you never want to pigeonhole the guy, because he does I mean, he did Beastmaster and Phantasm, Bubba, and then John Dies. There's nothing like, if you were to sit those films all side by side, there's nothing, You know, I mean, some directors get stuck in, you know, in a particular genre that is their strength. I don't think Don has that problem.
No, I agree. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's not, like, you know, Tim Burton. Like,
yeah.
Don Coscarelli, if you saw him on the street, he'd be the guy who'd help you picture, you know, hey, can you have a jumper cables? Yeah, Don would be, yeah, let me help you out. You know, he's just a regular guy.
Yeah.
Just a regular guy. Big-hearted guy. He always felt so bad as John died. You know, he was like, Dan, I want you to play this part, but, you know, you have to wear this mask. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. That'll be fine. It's fine. And then one day we're, you know, I walked on the set the first day and I said, I have that voice that I want to use and I've been working on. Matter, everyone knows that's Roddy McDowell under the Cornelius makeup. He can't tell by his voice. And then I realized, wait a minute, I didn't use my voice. God dang it.
Oh, that's great. Another person you've done a lot of collaborations with, just looking through your credits, is with, of late, Rob Zombie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rob, I just did last week, I just did the new, Devil's Rejects 2-3 from Hell.
Wow.
And not, you know, let's say that my role has no great bearing on the plot. But the thing I like about Rob is that he, you know, he knows that it's kind of cool for me to be in the movies. And I you know, I've played more screen now. This is the third time because we did the original movie. Then he very graciously put more screen in El Super Visto.
Right.
Animated.
Yeah.
And now he's in this movie, so that's, you know, more screen 3 times in 15 years. I like that.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I like to think about that.
What's Rob like in real life? He looks like a very interesting character, but is he different to people's perception of him?
I think so. But I think that's true of almost all.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that if I had to like the first time I went to see Rob in a concert.
Right.
Now, I only knew him as a guy who collected horror movie posters and directed movies. So when I went to see a concert, you know, it would have been like Dippy Hendren watching Alfred Hitchcock in the Ice Capades.
Right.
It was like, what is this?
Right.
All this jumping around and screaming and pyrotechnics, and then, you know, on stage, he's like, hey, Dan, how you doing? Oh, hey, that's great. He's a good-hearted guy, too. I think I amuse him. I gave him a job. I've been writing a book called The Audition is the Job and Other Truths that I've Learned in the Land of Make-Believe. And I sent him the chapter where I talk about, Jim, I talk about the longest day I ever had on a set was we were doing a reshooting a sequence in Halloween 2 that started at 6 a.m. one day and went until 7 a.m. the next day.
Wow.
In which I had to be made up 3 different times, killed, beaten, torn apart more, beaten some more. And by the time we were done, I mean, it was a long day, and I make a lot of jokes about how while Tyler Mane was, you know, kicking the shit out of me, Rob wouldn't say cut. He was just so entertained.
Right.
Tyler was slamming me into this couch.
No.
You know, after like 3 minutes, I finally said, would somebody, for the love of God, please call cut?
Wow. So you're writing, this is your autobiography, is it? Or just a...
Well, it's not.
A memoir.
It's more of a, there's no book, Kent. There's no book for actors written by working actors telling them what the real audition process is.
Okay,
they're
right.
Books by teachers who've never been cast.
Right,
telling what an audition is. Books written by casting directors who have one single solitary point of view, which is illogical to think that they all do it the same way. So that's crap. So I've been writing a book that will just be for actors. And it's really about empowering them, because at some point in the the world of acting audition has been, you've given all of your power over to the other people in the audition, to the point where actors really truly believe that, you know, their life, it can be changed by people in a room, as opposed to their life can only be changed by them.
Right.
See what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If you really think your journey, your physical journey on this earth could be blocked by someone not giving you a part, when in reality, it's you and you alone who have to earn that part. You know, actors have given away all of their strength.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to help them refine it.
No, that's great, and it is very true. It's true of a lot of, as we say, so-called how-to books in the industry, how to write a screenplay, how to direct a movie, how to, you know, all this sort of stuff. And a lot of the, you know, as you said, a lot of the books and various classes are conducted by people who don't really have any credits or a lot of credits, and they presuppose a lot, and their approach is very academic, as opposed to, I've always been of the opinion that I would rather sit down with someone who's been doing it, someone like yourself, for a long time and doing it successfully, and have you tell me than sit in one of those seminars, people like, you know, who might have been a casting director in some way, shape, or form, and then they've obviously they're trying to strike oil by telling people, well, I've done this for a couple of years now, and I know, and you know, give me your money, and I'll give you my secrets.
Yeah, and it's always seven secrets too, or four secrets, or the six secrets of a good audition.
Right.
Seven secrets. You know what I mean? Like it, and I mean my. Kind of my, I tolerate a lot. It's funny, as an actor, you go through life, and people just, you know, they don't know. Sometimes they'll say, my God, you look so fat on TV. And I'll go, oh, well, thank you, you know. Or they'll say, oh, I always see you in those little parts. And I'll say, well, you know, those little parts, you know, I had to beat 900 people out for that role.
Right, but, yeah.
You know, like they diminish. I don't think they're, I know they're not being cruel, they just are being, you know, uneducated.
Yeah.
And but the one thing that what drives me crazy is if someone says, oh yeah, I teach a class, my career is just like yours, and I look at their career, and they're, you know, if the guy giving you advice on how to start a movie has played janitor, judge, juror number two, guest at party, he's not a movie star. He's a day player.
Right.
So he doesn't know, like, he can't even tell you, I'm going to teach you about the art of the close-up. No, dude, you're an extra. You've never had a close-up. Don't give people bad advice, wrong advice, misadvice. That's the big thing. It's all, what it really comes down to, Kent, is that it's all dangerous, incorrect advice.
Yeah.
That is moving people away from their goal, not toward it.
Sure.
And so I think that this book should go a long way in just giving the actor the self-confidence to be proactive and not be fearful.
Yeah.
If nothing happens, there's nothing in life. Look, Getting Grace wouldn't have been made if I was afraid to make it.
Sure.
I had to turn to my wife, Tammy, who produced it with me. And I said, you know, I think we should make the movie. And she said, okay. I said, that means we're, you know, I'm not going to be able to make other money.
Yeah.
For over a year. She's like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't have it both ways. I couldn't make the movie but keep working on, like, Man in the High Castle.
Right.
We had to make them mad and say, I'm not available.
Right.
Can't do it.
Yeah, I think another thing, too, is that fear that you talk about, that's kind of the... I mean, because you can't really hide in front of the camera, especially. And in an audition, if you're afraid, I think the camera, certainly the mood in the room is different. If you walk in there, you know the lines, you're prepared, you've got a character in mind, you've built it up, and you can own it. And I think that if you walk in with that attitude, then that will translate. I mean, obviously, they see so many people in an audition. As Quentin Tarantino famously once said, someone asked him, how do you make it in Hollywood? And he said, well, in Hollywood, it's like the ocean, right? The waves come in, and there's wave after wave after wave, and all the waves are the same. But what you need to do is put a killer shark on one of those waves and be the difference that makes a difference. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you could, if you're not an actor, maybe you should think about doing it. The book's called, again, The Audition Is the Job and Other Truths I've Learned in the Land of Make-Believe. And that's the point I'm making is, if the audition is the job that you have, then there is no failure. Because actors think that getting the job or not getting the job is failure, getting the job is success. But that's horse hockey. The success is, did you audition as well as you could? If you did, then there's this other thing that happens that nobody wants to admit, but it's this thing that's called by some God,
right,
destiny, whatever you want to call it. Whether you could be the best guy in the world, the best audition, but if your destiny is not to get that role, it doesn't matter. So if you think that the people in a room, and we're talking auditioning actors, we could be talking to guys applying to be garbage men or people applying to dental school. If you think that there is a human force that can stop you from achieving your goal, then you don't believe in yourself well enough or your goal.
Right.
Well enough. I don't know. I never thought that when I started this whole process of becoming an entertainer, that I'd also be a bit of a missionary.
Right.
But it has occurred to me that I've been blessed extraordinarily and have always had a vision of my life, a vision of my future. The things of my youth paid off to be, they all paid off in my adulthood. And I think that's true. We all have that ability. But, you know, somehow my sticking to the destiny and not moving away from it has been a success for me. And I believe it could be a success for everyone. And I think, like, getting back to getting grace, approaching life with a sense of wonder and amazement every day is the best way to get through life.
Sure. Yeah. And what I took away from it, and it's kind of my personal philosophy too, is no matter the, I mean, you can always, you know, as Han Solo once famously said, never tell me the odds. If you see things as possible, right, forget about whether it's a good chance or half a chance or half full or half empty. If you just see things as possible and not sort of say, well, I hope to achieve this in X amount of days or whatever, just say it's possible and I'm just going to keep moving forward thinking that this is possible, as ridiculous as the idea might be. And I think in the end, if you see things that way, say this is possible, I can do this, and not break it down to the point where people do, where, you know, like you said, they break it down and say, well, I did this, but this didn't go the way I wanted, and, but, you know, there's a thousand things that they, self-depreciating things that they break down into ultimately what it was a success, and like they're disparaging their own successes and say, well, look, I got the job. It's like you said, you know, oh, that was a small part you played in X, you know, movie X or whatever it was. And you say, well, look, I beat 900 people for that part. So, look, who had the win here? It was me, right?
Right. Right, and if you're, and get your, all of this is correct. Your personal philosophy, I think, is sound. And if you're teaching your kids that is great. What's extraordinary to me is, as I mentor actors, two things. One is, and I mentor actors for free. That's a service I do for God and the world, because no one was here to answer questions without taking money.
Right.
And there's still now such a proliferation of what do they call, life coaches. Like, I mean, if actors can be talked out of their money, they are. When I say, I'll help you for free, you know, there's people go, well, is the information of value if it's free? And I think, and this girl just said this to me the other day. I said, you go to my IMDb page and look me up. And then you decide if perhaps my information has value.
Right.
But I shouldn't have to fight someone to mentor them. But the two things I was going to say, one is that people often ask for advice, don't apply it. And two, their life dreams are met, but not at the level that they expected. And
right.
Not enough.
Yeah.
And so I've always held back on, I've never said, I'll be a movie star. I never said, I'll win an Oscar. I never said anything like that. All I ever said is, I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
I'm an actor.
Yeah.
All I ever wanted.
Yeah.
So I didn't set a ridiculous goal. I set a reasonable goal. And, you know, the fact that we're sitting here talking, I want you to think of this, that we're talking about a movie I made today, right, as well as a movie I made 30 years ago, Dudes, then, you know, there's a longevity that can only be seen as an extraordinary blessing.
Sure.
That I've done this and only this for as long as I have. So, and I'm completely uneducated.
Right.
I went to high school. That's
right.
As far as I got.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I just answered the call. Whenever it came, I was always 100% prepared. And I didn't, the other thing is, in life, as we're talking on this podcast, we're getting into the, excuse me, minutiae of, you know, how our dreams are fulfilled. One of the most important ways is that you've got to shut down the white noise.
Yes.
That is growing increasingly loud.
Yes, yes.
Every day. What is most important to our kids, we got to, because their white noise is 50 times worse than our white noise.
Yes, certainly.
100 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've got, you can't, when the kid would say, let's go smoke a bowl, I'd say, no, I got to play. I still am 55. I've got through my entire life without doing any drugs. And then at some point I realized that even alcohol was going to be a problem in my life because it's been a problem for every robot before me. So why would I think that it was going to miss me? So I just removed it so it would not be white noise.
Right, right.
I removed it completely.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is the other thing, that we must stay focused on the goal. And then when the goal comes, we can't expect the goal at a high level.
No.
If we're just accepted at any level, then it's always a success. Every day's a win.
Yeah. It's like I tell people, I'm, you know, a struggling screenwriter, and I've studied acting and all that type of thing. But my goal has never changed. I said that when people say, what's your goal in the business? And I said, well, when I was 4 years old, well, before I was 4 years old, I saw my first movie, and I said to myself, if I can, before I die, be a part somehow, I don't know what type of part, but any part that I can contribute to a film that someone else will see and keep the whole thing perpetuating, like someone will see that movie, be inspired, want to express themselves artistically and all that sort of thing. If I can be some small part of a movie that exists and my name is there on it somewhere and I contributed, then that's what I'm here to do.
Hey, why can't you? I mean, First place, that sounds completely logical. You're whatever, the other thing you're doing that's great is you're proactively getting to meet people who do this for a living.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's a kernel of knowledge you just gave me. So I can remember one day to go, hey Ken, what was that idea that you had for a thing? Film is more so than really any other medium, except if you put, you know, paint to canvas or a similar, you know, ink to paper or whatever simile you'd like to draw.
Mm.
Film is one thing that can last forever.
Oh, sure.
You can do a play, or you can only do it once.
Yeah.
Even if you do it for 10 years, you're only doing it once a day.
Yeah.
Or twice a day. But you're only doing it that one time. Only those people are seeing it. The thing about Grace is, you know, we came out in theaters, and we're still holding on. I mean, we've been in theaters here in the States now for 4 weeks. We're going on our 5th week.
Wow, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, in in contrast, Dude's played in 3 theaters, I think, in the entirety.
Right.
And it's, you know, virtually disappeared for 30 years.
Right.
Now
it's
having a resurgence. But, say, River's Edge or Fugitive or U.S. Marshals, any of these movies that I've been in, and now one day Getting Grace. Getting Grace was going to go from here to home video to Netflix to TV.
Yeah.
You know, home video again to, you know, whatever they invent, it'll end up being there. And it'll be there forever. So, you know, making the points that I was making in it were important, because that essentially might be, you know, if I die tomorrow, Getting Grace is my tombstone.
Right.
Getting Grace is what I think.
Right.
I think, and what I hope, and what I dream.
Yeah. But, I mean, those are those are the best kind. I think they're the most enduring. There are films certainly that linger because of a cult following, a group of people that just enjoy that movie to no end, and there's nothing about it they don't like. But I think also that the films that do endure are stories that had and have the filmmaker's personal, or the story has some sort of personal imprint on it, if you will. Rather like where we're talking about Field of Dreams. Now, the author of that story that was a very personal story for him, and it translates on film because we all have fathers, and we all have a certain relationship with our father, and we all can relate to having maybe a time where, you know, we didn't get on with our father or something like that. And it's ultimately a story about redemption. It's a story about rediscovering something that's lost. And like Getting Grace and like Pollyanna, in the case of your film and in Pollyanna, it's a character that is helping people discover something that they've lost, whether it be something in themselves or something that they need, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I think we as a society like things to change.
Yeah.
You know, there's a show here. Do they show that show called Hoarders? Or it's probably an Australian version of it. You know, where they go into these poor people who have these, they just can't keep their homes clean, and they can't differentiate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah, another show you're talking about, yep.
Yeah, and those shows, we watch that show because we see a house crammed with stuff, and at the end, we see a house not crammed with stuff. And we like that the house is not crammed with stuff. We, as an audience, watch it and are happy to see the change.
Yeah.
So I think transformation in film is what we see. Maybe that's why I personally, I'm a little bored by, let's say, superhero movies.
Right.
Because they all seem the same to me.
Yeah.
There's no surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder, really, you know, what the, you know, they're exciting and they make money and they sell popcorn and that's all great. But I don't see them moving the needle. I don't see our human race becoming any better.
I don't think we'll be talking about them in 30 years somehow.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Not one of those films has become the godfather of superhero films.
No.
I mean, the maybe when one transcends like Deadpool, it transcends because it has the ability to be like, I guess they decided that could be the R-rated movie, so
right.
They had more leeway with story and joke and relationships that the other ones don't have.
Right.
But I still don't like, not one of those movies has made me want to watch it. For, like, I watched, what is, Grand Hotel Budapest.
Yeah.
I probably watched that movie 4 times in 3 weeks.
That's a great movie.
It's a great, like, story.
Yeah.
And it was a beautifully realized story.
Yeah.
I want every movie to be that.
Yeah.
Three Billboards. Like, there was nothing in Three Billboards. You could not have told me, nobody I know could have said, this is the next thing that's going to happen in this movie.
Right.
Filled with blood.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what my next movie is more of a comedy.
Right.
It's called the Hail Mary.
Okay.
But it is it's a comedy about redemption. Essentially, you know, what do you do when you got nothing else to lose?
Right.
So we have this irascible nun identifies that this guy needs a shot at redemption. So she cons him into creating a football team for her at-risk all-boys Catholic school. So here's a guy who's just, you know, he's a loss.
Right.
She knows that there's a win in there.
Right.
And so I won't be able to have as many surprises, but I am going to try the nun's character that you've never seen before, and the guy's situation, the reason he's a failure to himself, is a situation I don't think I've seen in a movie before. So I think I've got a good running start at it. But it will be a movie that, you know, will also be like getting great. So hopefully at the end people will leave and go, I feel a little better about the world, not a little worse.
Yeah. Well, Getting Grace is a wonderful film, Daniel. It's been wonderful talking to you. In the parlance of my countrymen, you're a top bloke.
I accept that. I'm grateful. you are a gentleman, and thank you for your support of the movie. And we will get it to your countrymen as soon as we possibly can. And I'll let you know when that happens, so maybe you can help remind people.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's in a cinema at the moment that is saturated by these big popcorn films. It is astoundingly beautiful when a movie that has something to say comes along, and Getting Grace, I think, has a lot to say and gives a lot, I think will give a lot of people something to think about, which is something that doesn't happen at a summer blockbuster. You usually forget them, they're biodegradable, you forget them about 5 minutes after you walked out. But I watched Getting Grace, a couple of weeks ago now, because, you know, we had to reschedule to have our chat. But it is still stuck with me, and I have, vivid recollections of the scenes, and it definitely, I walked away thinking about something, and I like that. I like that about movies.
Thank you. That's so nice. Kent, I wish you all the best. God bless your family and your listeners, and I look forward to speaking to you in the future.
Yep, same to you, sir. You have a good rest of the evening, and we look forward to all of your future exploits. And, yeah, it's wonderful. Getting Grace, Daniel Robart.
Yeah, if you could please send people to gettinggracethemovie.com.
Oh, okay, yeah, we better plug that. Getting Grace.
Getting Grace, the movie.
Yep.
Themovie.com and Getting Grace on Facebook.
Yep.
Thank you.
There you go, people. Daniel Robart, right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye, Ken.
Okay, here we go.